You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. New body cam video shows the moment that police officers arrested the 58-year-old man who they say waited 12 hours on Donald Trump's Florida golf course before he was caught. Trump's friend, real estate developer Steve Witkoff, was golfing with the former president that day.
We're on the fifth green, and I heard the first shot. I was, I don't know, maybe 5 or 10 yards away from him. We were in a tight bunch group. I saw the Secret Service do exactly what they're supposed to do, which was get right on top of the president.
It was the second attempt on Trump's life in 9 weeks. Sean Diddy Combs has been arrested in New York. The grand jury indictment against him to be unsealed in court in a short time from now. Diddy's homes in Los Angeles and Miami were raided over the past several months amid accusations of abuse. With flames shooting into the air, a pipeline fire in the Houston area has led to evacuations and power shutoffs. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A new survey says Wisconsin's child care centers need more staff. The State Department of Children and Families research shows about 60% of providers have staff shortages. Providers would be able to serve as many as 33,000 more kids if they were at full capacity. A Wisconsin program is doing its part to help food insecurity and small farmers. Forrest Humphrey is with the local Food Purchase Assistance Program. He says participating growers prioritize sustainable farming.
We have producers who are providing some really, really high quality grass-fed beef into the program. And the reason that they're able to do that is because they have, you know, a really sophisticated managed grazing setup.
The program gives grants to farmers who set aside some of their fresh produce for food pantries. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers visited the University of Wisconsin-Superior on Monday. Governor Evers used the visit to welcome students back to the campus and promote his plans to increase funding for state colleges and universities. His plan is to increase funding by $850 million in his two-year budget. The proposed increase was made in response to the closure of a number of branch campuses, layoffs, and funding shifts. State Republicans are expected to fight the increase as they have in the past. Minnesota Governor and Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Tim Walz visited the University of Wisconsin-Superior on Saturday. Governor Walz focused his speech on things like taxes, affordable housing, and reproductive health care as he looked to solidify support for the Democratic ticket in the key swing state. He also leaned into his Midwestern roots, reiterating his belief that everybody deserves to have that Midwestern hospitality shown to them and that they have a right to be represented fairly no matter their party affiliation. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
Milwaukee's homestand is off to a good start. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. The Brewers got two home runs from Willie Adames and took down Philadelphia 6-2 on Monday. With the win, the Brewers can clinch a division title and a playoff berth Tuesday with a win and a Chicago Cubs loss. Milwaukee gets the Phillies again this afternoon in Game 2 of a 7-game homestand that also includes Arizona. Quarterbacks in the state of Wisconsin have had some misfortune this fall. Badgers QB Tyler Van Dyke will miss the rest of the season after tearing his ACL in Saturday's loss to Alabama. Braden Locke will take over behind center for Wisconsin. The Badgers are off until a week from Saturday when they take on USC. The injury bug bit the Packers last week when Jordan Love was hurt late in the season opening loss to the Eagles and then missed Sunday's game with the Colts. Coach Matt LaFleur said that his return will strictly be a medical decision and that Love can play even without practicing this week, although he prefers Love get in some work. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cusca with Civic Media Sports.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-80s. South winds at about 5 to 10. Clear tonight, low around 60. Sunshine and 83 for Wednesday. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 60 degrees. Slight chance of a shower Thursday with a high near 83.
Right now, it's 68.
It's time to go for the green or gold. with Civic Media's new Text to Win contest. When you go for the greener gold, you could win $100 cash, gold jewelry, and be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club-level seats to see the green and gold in Green Bay. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store and get ready to text in for your chance to win in this statewide contest. Get ready to go for the greener gold with your local Civic Media radio station.
Some big ideas being shared at the Cap Times Idea Fest in Madison. Civic Media is proud to be a part of it and will broadcast the one-on-one discussion with Liz Cheney. Hear why the former Republican Party leader does not support Donald Trump and more on Friday, September 20th at 7:30 p.m. Coverage featuring Liz Cheney live from Idea Fest, Friday night, September 20th at 7:30 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Dom Selvia.
Next time, is your employer discriminating against you for your adult content creations? And John Nichols from The Nation Magazine and The Cap Times. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy. We're Sandy the Music. Self-explanatory.
Self-explanatory. It's about football. Yeah, this is every wife's worst dream, though. This guy's saying he loves you more than everything but football.
So we're going to move on after, you know, we take these few callers. But I want to get this in before we do that, at least. 33 bomb threats have been made in Springfield, Ohio, since false claims, which were pushed by former President Donald Trump and his running mate, surfaced about Haitian migrants eating people's pets, the governor said. All of the threats have been determined to be hoaxes, some targeted at Springfield schools, including elementary school campuses. Governor Mike DeWine said Tuesday at a news conference, after he met with city officials, our children deserve to be in school. Parents deserve to feel that their children are being educated and that their children are safe, DeWine said. Sandy, that is really, you know, just how can you forgive that?
Well, the fallout, you know, the violent fallout from the rhetoric that's been used by Trump
and
over
Vance?
The years has been just this, you know, judges getting all, you know, every judge that seems to cross him, he attacks and they get death threats. It's commonplace, you know, so this is just, this is gaslighting, and it's really just trying to turn anything he can find into some political advantage. And now what he's basically asking for is immunity from criticism, because if you criticize me, you know, I might get death threats or worse.
Well, and then the other thing is, after the attempt on his life, he says, by the way, somebody tried to kill me. I need money. So, you know, he's...
Yeah, raise fundraising. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
Oh, I've been listening to this once again during this morning, and I just have to say that his rhetoric, the Republican mega rhetoric, is what's driving the driving force of what's going on. We've never had this before. And also, the two people who were involved in this assassination attempt, both of them, had ties to the Republican Party, not the Democratic Party, but the Republican Party. And I believe that a lot of this these things and ideas come out of Fox News and other places where they get their information. And it's like going back to the 1930s with the Nazi Party. and they would have these lies and criticisms about Jewish people, and these people would actually, German people, whatever, would actually believe this trash. And until we clean that up, we're going to see a lot more of this. And the only problem with this is that innocent lives are going to, they're going to successfully kill somebody or bomb somebody who has nothing to do with what's going on. And that's the big shame of this whole thing. These people at the mega party, you got to get off of Fox News and actually look at the real information that's coming across.
Hey, Susan, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Brendan from New Jersey. Brendan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make two quick points. One, I want to push back on some stuff that Sandy was saying. I don't think there's that much going on up in that bell tower, Sandy. I don't think he thinks things like that. He thinks me, how do I get in? And he's really good at diversion and misdirection when people ask him questions about things he needs to know about. You know, that's the first thing. Secondly, yeah, not only have these people that have tried to kill him are related to the Republican Party, they're related directly to Trump. This guy that tried to shoot him, voted for him in 2016, had mental problems. But, you know, guns aren't a problem in our country, sure. But, you know, again, you know, I cannot wait for the day that the Republican Party is nothing but a pile of ash, okay, because they did it to themselves. All these guys down in Washington, D.C. just took their spines, ripped them out, and just sit there and do whatever he tells them to do. And all the guy is a millionaire who got money from daddy, kind of like Elon and his diamond money from his family, you know, another clown with a lot of money, who also said, who also made the statement, well, no one's trying to kill Kamala, almost inciting these types of things for the people on X. You know, all this goes on, and I'm just so tired of it, and I can't wait for November to get here, because one way or another, then we got to cut a path. And I'm hoping we're cutting a path away from the next golf course this knucklehead's going to be on.
Hey, Brendan, well said, man. Thank you very much for the call. Mike from Kenosha. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call, as always. You know, the American people have had enough of being played like a fool. And it's, again, at the feet of one person, Donald Trump. Look at the carnage this guy has created since he decided to dip his feet in politics. Again, birtherism, climate denial. In a topic that CJ brought up a week or two ago, that a couple of electric vehicle manufacturers were struggling, and one of them was going to go out of business. Well, that's as a result of Trump pulling us out of the Paris Accord. All the other nations, I think 198, signed on to pivoting out of the fossil fuels. And we're the only ones that were, you know, pulled out. Business needs a long vision of you know, plans and goals. We can't be bouncing around back and forth because as soon as we signed on to Paris Accord, for example, you know, all this money went into manufacturing and being, you know, buying the building and setting it all up. And then by Trump removing America from the bill, all of a sudden it left that company with nothing. So that's the downside risks of shooting your mouth off and, you know, inflicting a massive change in policy is you have business people and investors that end up losing their shorts.
Well, interestingly, the electric vehicle issue with the somewhat declining demand for electric vehicles in the United States, even though it continues to be a growing segment of the market, is also the result, I think, of the politicization, the purposeful politicization of trying to pit sort of the Republican conservatives against electric cars. I mean, it sounds like a screwy concept, right?
Yeah.
But they made up they made up the notion that there was a mandate from the federal government for electric cars. I mean, the federal government did implement some internal mandates. They bought electric vehicles in the instance of the U.S. government buying certain kinds of vehicles.
Offer some tax breaks.
They offered tax breaks to people, which was a choice that people could make. They tried to incentivize it. It turned and the automobile industry in the United States was willing, believed, and correctly believes that in the long run that's where the market's going. And in fact, China is rapidly developing the capacity to build as many electric cars as the world needs if we don't hurry up and have electric vehicle manufacturing capacity in the United States. So, yeah, he politicized it just the way he did masks, causing people to stop wearing masks. You know, the fact is that politics can have an impact in the marketplace. And for whatever reason, he decided to politicize electric vehicles, which I think if you looked at the curve in terms of growth of demand, the politicization of the electric vehicles had everything to do with a slowdown in the growth rate of the demand for electric vehicles.
Mike, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning. I just want to get Sandy's take on this next comment I'm going to make. I believe that it's the Trump's goal and the right wing's goal right now is to flood the zone with everything Trump. So people become apathetic and the independents say they hate politics and they don't show up. Also, so Harris and Waltz don't get their news cycle and their positivity does not get heard on the plans for the future. The thing we have to remember is that the billionaire class is paying a lot of money to make it so us average people cannot vote and make us apathetic. And we have to remember that the vote is the coin to the realm of this whole thing. And we just need to get out, vote up and down the ticket, blue, make sure that we have a progressive or a Democratic House and Senate overwhelmingly. And also, I would just like to say, I want Sandy to comment on the first part, but think about all the corporate welfare that the oil and gas company has received over the years. It's astounding, and it is corporate welfare, not subsidies. Anyway, thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air, Sandy.
All right.
Well, I think Donald Trump's strategy has always been to claim the limelight in any fashion possible. Make sure that the news cycle is always about Donald Trump, and if it isn't going to be about anything positive, which it rarely can be because he has very little in the way of positive stuff to talk about, then it's going to be negative. So it'll be attacks on people, it'll be negative comments, it'll be statements that are in essence outrageous. But yeah, that's his strategy, and it has been an effective one. You know, as far as he's concerned, any news is good news, as far as he's concerned, as long as he's in the limelight.
All right, let's go to Don from Milwaukee. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Earl. Sandy, first of all, I'd like to pay Sandy a compliment, and then I'd like to make a comment. First of all, Sandy, I'm telling you, you are the most even-keeled guy. You deal in fact, not politics. I really like that.
Hey, Don, hang on, man. Hang on, Don. 844-967-2789. Sandy wants to hit a compliment again, so we'll give you enough time on the other side.
You can
side.
Have the whole next segment, Don.
It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
When right-wing politicians tried to sell us out to Big Pharma and the insurance companies, Tammy Baldwin refused to back down. Baldwin took on the big drug companies and capped the price of insulin at $35.
She fought for people like me.
Everything they've done with the health care, with the insulin.
They've done a lot of things to help lower bills.
Baldwin led the charge to make sure people with pre-existing conditions could keep their health care. And after Roe v. Wade was struck down, Tammy wrote the bill to restore equal access to abortion care for women everywhere.
She wants to make sure that all of us keep our benefits. She wants to make sure that we have the right to choose.
There's too much at stake here. We have to get out and vote.
I'm going to vote for Tammy Baldwin.
I'm proud to be voting for Tammy Baldwin.
Paid for by Power to the Polls Federal Fund, powertothepollsfund.com, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
One might think it comes with glory. You might think different after you listen to my story. My helmet is equipped with a tiny face mask.
So this guy made money.
This is Adam Sandler.
Oh, all right.
This is Adam Sandler. This is a sad story of a
field goal kicker. Yeah, who lives a
lonely
existence.
No glory, just...
all right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and Sandy.
Yeah, I know. I dipped pretty low, Adam Sandler. That's not even music.
Let's go. To Don from Milwaukee. He's here to bail you out. He's talking about, you know.
He's going to retract. He's going to retract it now.
Hey, go ahead, Don.
I wanted to also provide a comment. Instead of trying to suppress freedom of speech with these assassination attempts, let's get something, I would hope we would get something constructive done, have a bipartisan bill, and ban those darn assault weapons. If we ever needed that passed, it would be now. So that is my comment for
today. All right. Don, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Eric from Tulsa. Eric, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Earl and Sandy. First things first, can we just try and get this right once and for all? Maybe you need a show, Earl, like featuring Hooked on Phonics. It's comma la. The Sanskrit word for lotus, which is a beautiful name. Your callers can just put a post-it on their computer as a reminder. Anybody intentionally mispronouncing it is really honestly losing credibility. It's almost like that Democrat Party crap. Pardon my language. As for the rhetoric creating potential for violence, Earl mentioned it earlier, but after multiple bomb threats and anti-immigrant groups marching through town, the governor of Ohio was forced to send law enforcement to Springfield so the city can get back to living their lives. So whose rhetoric caused this? What did the Democrats say to create this dangerous situation? As for Benedict Donald, through his own behavior, he's earned the scorn and mistrust of those speaking out against him. He's been using racist, defamatory rhetoric since he barred black folks from renting his properties, took out a full-page ad in the New York Times seeking the death penalty for the innocent kids known as the Central Park Five, and then resurfaced alongside fellow criminally racist Sheriff Joe Arpaio as the country's birther-in-chief. I mean, this is his base. And honestly, I can only surmise that they are indeed deplorable human beings.
Oh.
So, again, this episode is just projection, followed by deflection, so that we the people aren't talking about the GOP plotting to take away basic human rights, reproductive rights, our right to not live in fear of gun violence, not to mention plotting to take away democracy from most of us with Project 2025.
Hey, Eric, is there anything else left in the tank?
There's lots.
I know, Eric. Thank you very much for the call, man. It's always good to hear from you. You know, Sandy, we're going to move on, but I think it is, you know, we got 50 days left in this, Sandy, and This is you and I have seen a lot of different campaigns. We've seen some nasty campaigns. This one is going to be the worst.
Well, you know, so far, I would say that actually, contrary to Donald Trump's statement, I think the Democratic approach has been to talk much more about policy. I think that, that both Kamala and Walz have done some smiling trolling and poking the bear of Donald Trump to kind of goad him. But mainly, I think, their discussions at rallies and elsewhere have been about the policies they intend to implement and not negatives about what's the other side. I mean, the preamble to their talk is why you shouldn't be a Republican, why you shouldn't vote Republican, but most of their talk is. So I think so far, you know, things have been on a pretty even keel. My concern is that as you get closer to an election, the mud comes out, and usually the last 10 days of an election get terribly muddy. And I'm very concerned about the depths to which Donald Trump might go in this process. I'm not as concerned about the Democrats. There's nothing new to find out about Donald Trump, you know, nothing.
Well, you know, Sandy, part of this and part of me just begs the question. You said off the air earlier, might have been on the air, that undecided group of people, when they're watching this and they're hearing these things, I'm just wondering, you know, for somebody who's undecided and they're looking at both sides and they're hearing these kinds of things, that would certainly, if I'm undecided, I would say, hey, that's not good for our nation, regardless of what side I'm on.
Well,
right?
you would think that each hour and each day, the number of people who are undecided will be shrinking. They'll see more and more. And of course, it behooves Donald Trump to claim that Kamala Harris is a blank slate, that you don't know anything about her, so vote for me because I was president for 4 years and okay. But actually, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are talking a lot about policy, and they're talking about concrete policy. Donald Trump, when pressed, you know, he talked about health care. He said, well, I have a concept for a plan. I don't have a plan. But, you know, the fact is that the Democratic approach to this election, I think, is quite policy-driven, discusses policy in relatively great depth for a campaign. Frequently, campaigns don't get all the way to talking about the fine details that are involved with the funding bill that's gonna happen. But, I mean, they are talking about fiscal discipline. They're talking about rearranging priorities to try and reflect the interest of Tom, Dick, and Mary. And I think that's all very important, and hopefully the undecideds out there will take that into account.
You know, Sandy, on the other side, we're going to talk about, you know, the soaring federal debt and whether or not we should be concerned about it at all. But we're also going to talk about the fact that the Federal Reserve is looking to cut interest rates. And these two things should be talked about as we approach, you know, the election, right? I mean, they should matter. They should be on the table,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I will tell you that the reason we don't talk about the national debt is because the defense establishment is terribly worried about what would happen to this massive defense budget if we really get into the business of carefully weighing priorities as to where we ought to spend all of our money and where it is we ought to pare back expenditures.
You know, Sandy, I didn't think about it from that perspective, but you are right. You can't talk about the national debt and what has to be cut, and you look at the big slice of that. And then we're going to talk a little bit, you know, with time about how many different proxy wars we're involved in. Yeah. 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. Tuesday's my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s name will stay on November ballots in Wisconsin. A judge in Madison yesterday denied a request from the Kennedy campaign to take his name off. Kennedy is out of the race and endorsing Donald Trump. Kennedy's lawyer says he plans to appeal. 13% of Wisconsin children live in poverty. That's according to the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Lauren Relaford of the Children's Defense Fund says poverty is a toxic stress.
Children see their parents being stressed, and they take that on too. And so why are we allowing these children to grow up without the necessary resources they need?
Efforts to expand the federal child tax credit stalled recently in the U.S. Senate. Relaford says it could have lifted 400,000 children out of poverty nationwide. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The new owner of the former Anderson Furniture building in Duluth has big plans for its future. Deborah Rochelle and her son are hoping to turn the building into a kind of mini mall with restaurants and shops on the ground floor and short-term rental units on the top three floors. Plans for the future of the building are still in the early stages, and construction on anything wouldn't start until 2025. In the meantime, Deborah is looking for possible future tenants in the building so they can hit the ground running after construction. New medical students at the University of Minnesota Duluth will be able to complete all 4 years of their training at the school starting next year. Officials say the university is seeking state funding to expand and establish a new academic health center in the city's medical district. Ascentia Health and Aspirus St. Luke's have both offered proposed sites for the new building. As they await funding to make the plans for the building, university officials have already started to transition the medical school program from 2 years to 4 years. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The 76th Annual Emmy Awards are in the books. Despite The Bear receiving the most ever Emmy nominations for a comedy series in a single year at 23, Hacks won the Emmy for Best Comedy Series. Shogun had 25 Emmys and won Best Drama, as well as Best Lead Actor and Actress. The show took home 18 Emmys in its first season. That's a record for a single year. This is the second time the Emmys have been held in 2024, as the 75th annual ceremony was held in January due to the writers and actors strikes. Hacks winning Outstanding Comedy Series over The Bear was not really an upset, but was a surprise. Lead actress in the show, Jean Smart, won Best Actress in a Comedy Series, and the show also won the Emmy for Best Comedy Writing. Speaking of comedy, taking home the Emmy for Outstanding Talk Series was The Daily Show, and in the scripted variety series, it was Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. If you haven't checked it out, it's an absolute must. Brilliant show. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-80s. South winds at about 5 to 10. Clear tonight, low around 60. Sunshine and 83 for Wednesday. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 60 degrees. Slight chance of a shower Thursday with a high near 83.
Currently, 69 degrees.
This is the story of the one. As a facility technician installing a new welding station, he knows getting the ventilation right is critical for safety. That's why when questions arise, there's Grainger. Grainger offers detailed technical product information online at his fingertips, so it's easy to find what he needs. Because when it comes to safety, having answers means he and his people can breathe a little easier. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, our statewide Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest continues, and we debut a completely legitimate and totally real new attack ad. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Mm-hmm.
coming on tonight.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my call, Sandy Williams and Sandy.
Football.
Football, football. Let me ask you, Sandy. I couldn't help but this is in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Federal debt is soaring. Here's why Trump and Harris aren't talking about it. Before we get into that aspect of it, Sandy, I want to make sure that I get this in, and then we'll go back to that debt and why it's so important or not so important. We were talking about, you mentioned something about the military.
Well, and, yeah, I said one of the reasons we don't talk about the national debt politically is that if we get into a careful analysis of it, looking at priorities for expenditures, the defense budget will definitely be on the table and it will be dissected and discussed. And I'm sure that the defense establishment is happy with sort of the deficit programs that that have been run for a number of years, starting with, I mean, George Bush II was the first person to wage major wars and not to raise taxes in order to support them. He reduced taxes. And so, you know, that became a painless way to have war for the country because we didn't, the American taxpayer didn't feel the cost of it. And the defense establishment got the benefit of it.
So I remember the first George Bush saying, we won this war and we made a profit off of the war. I forgot the war that his father was in, that we were in, but I remember him saying he made a profit off it. The reason I'm asking, Sandy, is because we are getting ready to come out of Iraq. I don't know how many people knew we were still engaged in Iraq. 23 years later, and yet we've still got military in Iraq, and we're still spending money in Iraq, and we're finally getting ready to pull out. And while I was going through that, Sandy, I wondered, okay, so the American people don't know that we've got that kind of money, that we're still there investing money there. And then I looked up and it says the U.S. is presently involved in 15 shadow wars all over the globe. Our military is engaged. Sandy, you got a list of the different places we're in.
We before the show, we went through it. Yemen, Syria, Ukraine. And that's not, I guess that's a proxy war. Cameroon, Iraq, Egypt, Kenya, Lebanon, Libya, Mali, Mauritania, Niger, Somalia, Nigeria, Afghanistan.
So how many of Americans knew that we were? So if we're there, Sandy, it means our military is there and we're spending money.
Well, in a number of them, we have military bases. Egypt was one where we have troops there, and we're sending hundreds of millions of dollars to a numbers of these places. Numbers of them are the result of political vacuums, some of which we were principally involved with creating. So that Iraq, for instance, we upended their government. Much we didn't like it, the Saddam Hussein government, the Ba'athist Party. But you know, Colin Powell in the original war in Iraq said, "Look, we aren't going to topple the government, because if we break it, we own it, right?" But George Bush II decided he was willing to break it and willing to own it. We did. We demolished the regime. We got rid of the army. We got rid of the Ba'athist Party. We got rid of the political establishment. And a vacuum resulted. And Iraq is a mess now. And we're going to, we are largely there because that vacuum is being filled by ISIS and by Islamist radicals. And so, why are we there? Well, we're kind of there because we broke it. Now we're stuck with it. Afghanistan, same thing. It had a vacuum that was filled by the Taliban. Lebanon has long been a vacuum that was not necessarily created by us, but it's a government that is in a vacuum status. Somalia, no government there. Syria, we're there because of ISIS, and we have issues there associated with the ongoing regime. But when we broke ISIS's back, we did it in conjunction with the Syrian leader Hassan and with Russia. And now we're kind of, that's all become kind of confused.
So we're
in all these places. Many of them are because there's a political vacuum that's being filled by radicals.
So, Sandy, the reason I asked you to bring that up and we began talking about this budget deficit or debt that we owe is because the military, as you mentioned to me, and the amount of money that we're spending there has to be addressed if we're going to talk about this debt.
Oh, I mean, these things cost probably billions of dollars a year, all of these. But our budget is $860 billion, the military budget, military defense budget. So, you know, these things contribute to it, but there's far more in that military budget to be analyzed to figure out how much we should be spending. When you compare the scale of the military budget to, for instance, the cost of child daycare subsidies and what have you, those costs are minuscule compared to the military budget. And there is, if there was money to be found in paring back or reanalyzing where money should be spent in the military budget, we'd probably find money to spend on the things that are needs for Tom, Dick, and Mary. And that's why the military-industrial complex undoubtedly prefers us operating oblivious to deficits because we don't roll up our sleeves and do the hard work of prioritizing expenditures.
Well, and very few politicians or politricksters are going to cut off their noses to spite their faces if I've got a military base in my city or state, or if I've got a company that is producing military.
Sure.
I'm not going to be the guy who's going to say, hey, you're going to shut me down.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, we've got Wisconsin, we've got plenty of military subcontractors, Oshkosh Truck, we've got military bases. And we are by far on the low end of the scale in terms of states that have reliance on the military industrial complex budget, you know, the military defense budget. But we do have to develop discipline about the national debt, because the fact is that if you just look at it simplified, our national debt is like the mortgage that we carry for our country. And you can carry a mortgage that's relatively sizable if you have a very sizable income. And so what we'd measure, economists like to measure the size of the national debt against the size of our GDP. The GDP is the national income, essentially. It's the GDP is what we tax for the revenue that's received by the government. If our GDP is growing faster than our national debt, then the size of our mortgage as a percentage of our income is shrinking. If our national debt is growing faster than our GDP is growing, then our mortgage is growing faster than our income. And, of course, that's something that has a finite limit to it. Your mortgage can't get to be too big a percentage of your income, or you can't afford to carry the carrying costs of it, okay? That's oversimplified, but it sort of explains how it is that you can afford to have a growing national debt if your GDP is growing, if your income is growing rapidly. You can allow yourself to have a growing mortgage. You can get a more expensive home, move into it, have a bigger mortgage. It's okay. So it is okay to have a growing national debt, but it can't grow faster than the GDP on a perpetual basis. It has been recently, and therefore we need to work on discipline to get to the point where it is growing slower than our GDP so that we can get back to the point where our national debt is at a lower, probably more sustainable percentage of our GDP.
But Sandy,
incidentally, the policies that have been proposed by the two current candidates, Donald Trump's proposed policies, his big tax reduction, his tariffs, et cetera, would increase the national debt at about 1.5 times to maybe almost 2 times the level of increase in national debt that would occur based on Kamala Harris's policies as proposed. So, you know, it's Donald Trump that is proposing the less disciplined fiscal approach. It is Donald Trump that's got proposals that will increase the national debt at a greater rate.
But Sandy, listening to you as an economist, listening to you, it makes me wonder, well, no, it makes me understand why they're not willing to deal with the military aspect of this And then they want to say, we've got to cut these other things because we can't afford them. So the people, we can't address the issues that the and the pain that the people are facing because of our obligations to the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact is that our foreign policy currently is premised on the notion that we will police the world, that disruptions any place in the world somehow constitute a risk to our national security. And it's that outlook that was born really, you know, we didn't have responsibility for the whole world during the Cold War because the Iron Curtain put a bunch of the world, right. Red, you know, communist China and the rest of the world was beyond our reach. All we had to do was sort of take care of the rest of it. And there wasn't much going on in the rest of it. But now we've taken since the fall of the Soviet Union, we've decided that the entire world, under this sort of neocon view of things, that it's up to the United States to police the world. And that's an immensely expensive proposition.
Sandy, we are not in the position that we were 50 years ago to do that. The American people, because the American people 50 years ago were in better financial shape than they're in, and many of them are in now.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, internally, we didn't have the same social, economic, right. socioeconomic, political.
Well, industry
issues
and stuff was going on.
Well, and we have this growing GDP in the United States. We have growing salaries. It's just that it's become dislocated, and we have pockets of wealth and pockets and what's changed really is the middle class. And our middle class needs attention. It needs support. It is strapped financially. It is living paycheck to paycheck. And only one of the current presidents, people running for president, wants to talk about actual policies to address the plight of our middle class. But in any case, if we're just going to talk macroeconomics, we need to get disciplined about the rate of growth of our national debt. One of our candidates is more disciplined. Neither one of them has the rate of annual deficit down to the level that probably is sustainable, which should be in the probably $2 trillion level. But, you know, we've got far greater than that.
All right, let's go to Tom from West Dallas. Good morning to you, Tom. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Hey, good morning, John. I'll make this quick. How do we decrease the military budget when – on a few occasions, say they wanted $3 trillion, and Congress says, "Well, here's another $1 trillion just to throw on top of it."
Yes.
I don't think there's a desire at all in Congress to do that with anything. They'd rather just cut everybody else out and keep putting the big money into military that, you know, that some of those people like Halliburton and stuff really benefited from, but we don't.
As well said, Tom, Sandy will respond on the other side, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Troy, our grand prize winner from that Just a Bit Outside the Movie Text to Win contest out in beautiful Mount Horeb.
You got to go see this movie. You know, you'll laugh, you'll cry. I know that sounds cliche, but it's true.
It is.
The no narrator was perfect for this movie, and that's what made the movie.
Yeah.
Seeing the players in their own words telling these stories.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Who let the dogs out? Hoot, hoot, hoot.
That'll wake you up. Welcome back to what is the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I just want to – you heard Mike from Tom. Yeah, from West Dallas.
Yeah, well, you know what I was saying before, I just to be clear – what I was talking about is a sustainable level of growth rate in national deficits is probably something that is $2 trillion over a decade, okay? And what's being talked about by Donald Trump is something in the neighborhood of $6.5 to $7 trillion over a decade. And what's being talked about by Kamala Harris right now is in the neighborhood of $4 and $4.5 in her policies. So Donald Trump's is a far less disciplined approach that will expand the national debt far more. It's why the financial community, I think, is bailing out on Donald Trump and doesn't want to see his policies enacted. But the fact is that the level of that we can sustain requires that we roll up our sleeves, look at the budget, and I would assert that will require that we look at the defense budget carefully and our international policies upon which it's premised carefully. And that's an analysis that all politicians seem to want to duck from, because the power of K Street, the power of lobbyists, the power of the jobs in each state, there's a good reason why there are military bases in just about every state in the United States, and why there are military contractors with sizable employee numbers in every state.
All right, let's go to Tom from Richland Center. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what, sir?
Good morning. Good morning. You're talking about the complex when you mentioned that. That's part of even Bernie Sanders voted for the F-35 because he had people in his state. But I want to mention the policeman thing, policeman of the world. You know, when you think about policemen standing on the cop, the old English bobby, you know, that's not such a bad thing. In Uganda, they had two tribes massacring us, and we all stood back and watched because we didn't have an interest there. But when we want to go make an empire, then we have 800 bases around the world. I'm told that when they went into Iraq, they thought within a couple weeks or maybe a couple months, they were going to turn around and go to Tehran. If you want to talk about World War III, it's the empire. And I'm afraid even the Democrats kowtow to the empire. The military industrial complex is everything Eisenhower warned us about.
Hey Tom, man, he's kind of right on, Sandy.
Yeah, I would say that I read Eisenhower's valedictory speech in which he talks about the military industrial complex. And he talked about a lot of things in that speech, and it was one of the wisest, now seen in retrospect, one of the wisest speeches I've seen. This was a guy who had been through World War II, had substantial responsibilities, was a military man to the core, and he foresaw the problems that we have experienced since 1960 when he stepped down. And I would urge anybody in the audience to get that speech and read it.
All right, Mike from Kenosha. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Real quick, I was doing some research, and we're talking about proxy wars here. In Afghanistan, at the time of withdrawal, the ratio was 7 contractors to 1 U.S. military. It was 7 to 1.
Wow.
Security. Wow. Versus U.S. military. Why do I bring that up? Is I believe that's one of the reasons why the Afghanistan infrastructure crumbled. How do you hold private security companies to the same esteem as, you know, a nation's military? I think, you know, that example of 7 private security contractors to one U.S. military person is probably the reason why Afghanistan had a lot of trouble in its exit. It's just the truth. So enough of this private industry and the war business.
Hey, Mike.
They're backed by a country or they're not.
I wish I had more time. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, that's astounding.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that we, like lots of countries, Russia in particular, with the Wagner Group and others.
Rebuild.
But we use private contractors a lot, and we use them for military roles, you know, Blackwater and others. So that military budget, one of the interesting things about the Defense Department budget, I found this out firsthand through a relative of mine, involves lots of dark money, money that we're spending that is designed not to be discovered by the public in places around the world or for things that we're working on around the world. The defense budget is in many respects a dark budget, and it can claim to be so for security purposes, but one person's security is another person's secret.
You know, Ari, that makes me think about when we first went into Iraq, and most people may not remember that Saddam Hussein and Iraq were our allies when they were at war with Iran.
Yeah.
And so when the war was going on, and after the war, people were looking for the semi-trucks full of $100 American bills that they knew Saddam Hussein had. Well, where did he get semi-truck loads full of American dollars, Sandy?
Right. I mean, you know, the fact is that, you know, we were active. The CIA was active. Our whole process was very active in the Mideast, doing things like supporting Iraq in their war with Iran. And we were selling them tanks. I think much of the military was American military equipment that we fought ultimately when we were fighting in Iraq. So, I mean, we just need to get a handle on this. And that budget, I know that there are plenty in Congress who say, well, we've got to spend more because we've got to get our military up to international snuff to carry out all the things we're going to need to do in the China Sea and the Indian Ocean and all around the world. But we need to take a look at that. You know, the American public, the American politicians need to roll up their sleeves, look at the entire federal budget. But that is definitely going to require that a microscope be put on the very largest segment of that budget.
Is it too late for the American people to bring that into the mindset of the elected officials that we have?
Well, I think it's getting there. I think that the fact that we have that dichotomy in national deficit between the Democrats and the Republicans with a larger deficit being proposed by their candidate, tells me that someone is exercising some discipline here. We just need to turn the knobs a little tighter in terms of that level of discipline.
Yeah, because again, Tom, Dick, and Mary, unless that's addressed, are going to continue to suffer. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are definitely programs, Kamala Harris is talking about them, that need to be implemented. They do have a cost. And so we need to make sure that cost is included in the budget, and other costs which are lower priority are not included.
All right, Sandy, until next time, thank everybody who made the show go. Up next, Jane Mattinier and Greg Bach Mattinier on Air Cabin. Thank you. Enjoy the warm weather. See you guys tomorrow.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins the show to discuss the Emmys. And I welcome comedian, TV host, and creator of the Travel Tales podcast, Mike Siegel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Wisconsin's volunteers are making a difference in our communities every single day. Find the perfect volunteer opportunities for you at volunteerwisconsin.org. You can filter by location, organization, cause, accessibility, and more, all to help find the best fit for you. Go to volunteerwisconsin.org or get in touch with your local United Way or Volunteer Center today. Volunteerwisconsin.org is hosted by United Way of Wisconsin and Serve Wisconsin. Paid for by United Way of Wisconsin.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.